Everybody, my name is Laura Tan, and I am the host of Your Money and Your Mindset. Welcome to another interesting, mind-blowing show. And as you know, as this title says, Money Mindset. Believe me, your mind has a lot to do with your ability to make money and keep it. And just to be clear, it's not only about the money, it's about your personal happiness, your ability to have good, rich relationships with people around you that are healthy. And speaking of health, it's having good health as well. So each week I bring to you a special guest or an expert in this particular field who can shed light on basically why you do what you do, and if your actions are not supporting you, what you can do about changing it. So the expert we have on today is John Higg. He is a psychologist and the clinical director of the Brain Training Center in Canberra, in Australia. And John specializes in neurofeedback. Love that. And the idea of neurofeedback is to be able to improve a person, his clients rather, performance, whether it's in sport, like he trains people in the Australian Institute of Sport, working on their mindset, or even little kids or students who have problems at school with attention deficit disorder, learning difficulties, even depression, sleep disorders, anxiety, pain, migraine. So it can help, and it will help you in many areas. But specifically, we're talking about money here today. So he is a psychotherapist first and a neurotherapist second. And John actually has a big heart because he has a very humanistic perspective to this work. So you're not just a subject, okay? You're actually a human being, a person that he works with and empathizes with. And he's got a great deal of experience and broad understanding in the application of how neurofeedback can help the human condition. He's also a member of the Australian branch of the Society for Neuroregulation. That's the largest worldwide professional organization for neurofeedback practitioners. So, John is on the show today because we want to talk about how neurofeedback, which is his specialty, can get you to the next level of business. Because there is a very strong correlation between how our brains function and the sort of tangible results we get in life. So if you're not getting the results you want in your business or your health for that matter, what John is going to talk about is basically could be the missing link when you understand what makes you tick. And the good news about this aspect is that a significant amount of that biological function is actually under your control and you can change things. So we're just going to get John on now to explain this in this next hour. So welcome, John Higg. How are you?
Thank you very much and good morning. It's a beautiful day in Canberra. I wish I could show you the picture outside. It's gorgeous.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. So we know that you are the clinical director of the Brain Training Center and you help people do what you do best. But just some background about you so that people get comfortable and know that you're human and you're not that, scientist in a white lab coat.
Thank you very much. I think if I talk about how I came into this field a little bit, it might explain a bit of my character. I've been a psychotherapist since I was a bubba, since I graduated back in the 1970s. And I've explored the experiential side of things very, very deeply. I suppose my career was always involved in the edge of things, the emergence of new perspectives and people coming into being. So that's sort of my training. And when I was introduced to neurofeedback, I went, ho, ho, ho. Thank you very much. And it took a friend of mine who's a very smart man about 2 years to talk me into even really looking at this relatively new therapy. Because I thought I'd pretty much had the field covered. I was towards the end of my career, I thought, at top of the mountain, I thought. Anyway, I hemmed and hawed, but I went and to humor him, I went to a course, went to a training course. And I swear, I was never so blown out in my life. The newness of it, the new perspective of it, just changed my way of thinking. And what the real driver was, I suppose, in getting going was I had a daughter with ADHD. Well, there's the connection most of us neurotherapists really come in on a needs basis. You know, we want to do something about something very close to us, very personal. So off I went, and the last 15 years has been a discovery of how this all works, and I've had to catch up on neurology. It's unfolding right before us, how the brain works, how the mind works, how these systems work together, and what we can do to enter into it. So I suppose I've kept my edge of not being too conservative in my perspectives. I've kept my edge, but I'm just as stubborn as everybody else. And I realized how slow it was for me to pick up on a new idea. So none of us can escape the tendency towards a conservative or more shallow way of thinking. But we don't know that when we're there. We think we're at the top of the mountain. Well, it's been humbling for me, and I've been able to meet some of the most smart, intelligent, adventurous people that exist on this planet through this technology. And it's just opened my perspective to how humility is really the important place to be if you want to open to anything new. So that's a bit about me.
Okay, I'm glad you said humility, and come in with an open mind. Okay, it's a pun, folks, because if we want to address this aspect where neurofeedback, it sounds a bit sciencey. It sounds a bit, I don't know. And it sounds like it's 1,000 miles away from somebody who's struggling with their business, let's say, because this is about money and mindset, all right, this show. Mm. And your I will call it therapy, your technology has been able to help people in so many different fields. And we as humans, we don't live compartmentalized lives. We actually are a whole. But we don't realize that there are aspects operating in the background that aren't helpful. So in the case, just picking the case of working with athletes at the Australian Institute of Sport, you've got clients there, and your job is to help them basically become that 100% focus in the moment, which is part and parcel of becoming a top athlete, right? They do all that physical training with their coaches, and you help them with their mind. And that seems to be the defining, factor between people who do very, very well under pressure and people who just fold. Can you just talk us through how neurofeedback does that?
Okay. If we look at the general thing of peak performance, that is, doing the best you can with what you have, not being somebody else, but doing the best you can with what you have. There are many reasons why we repeat patterns or we miss the moments of change that we need to adapt to. Either we get frightened, we get angry, we get wishful thinking. You know, years ago when I was on the Channel 9 golf show, we did comedy skits about cheating or trying to hit the ball too far, and all of these sort of dramas that we do. They represent our lives, our inner beliefs. And when you're out on the golf course, for example, you're displaying yourself, no one else. Your desire to be Greg Norman, or your fantasy of this, or your stubborn, repetitive behaviors that you do. So you keep slicing the ball. You keep doing all of these things. Lay yourself out. You know, your soul is on the course with you. And once you get that idea that you are the game, and top athletes, top business people, top professionals in their fields all realize at some point, they are the profession. They are the game. They are the business. That is them. And it's a direct reflection of how they see the world and how they react to things, things that shouldn't be, you know, accidents that happen to us, or, you know, torpedoes that hit our boat, you know. What do we do then? It wasn't on the plan. So the ability to be flexible, the ability to be present, not be bound by fears or negative thinking. These are all trainable positions that we can learn to attain once we know where we are. Once we can get some kind of grounded experience, we can then move towards a brighter place, a more reflexive, more spontaneous place.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're talking about the brain, even though it sits in our heads, and we think, you know, brain, mind, it just does its thing. We, the conscious person, can have control and influence over the way our brains function.
Very much so. Once you get the information, now the brain itself is not self-aware. We are aware, but within a limited band. You know, our consciousness is not the whole of the mind. It's not the whole of the brain. It's an aspect, and we can extend that out by becoming self-aware. I'll give you a simpler example than the mind, which would be your heart rate. You can alter your heart rate with biofeedback. You can change the way the health of that pattern through training. You can change your skin temperature through biofeedback, through training. So once you get the information loop, you can train these things. Now, the brain is the same. We can train different aspects of it. Okay. You're not going to change your brain into somebody else's brain, but you can make it the best it can be. Now, there are certain genetic limitations and certain experiential limitations that we have that shape and form us, but they are not written in stone. Even the genetic valiancies or towards depression, family, history of alcoholism or whatever, these are not chiseled in stone. They're valiancies, and we can train ourselves towards in different directions once we know what we need to do. And that's all of that information is housed in the electrical output of the brain. That is the brain doing its thing, you know. And once we can manipulate that through operant conditioning of brain waves. Now, that's a bit sciencey, I know. But the biofeedback side of it is what allows, and I hope we'll get into a little bit more practical expression of that in a bit.
Okay, that's really good. So let's use something that's people can relate to in terms of, let's say, a kid with ADHD. How do you get somebody so young, first of all, to settle down, and then you're going to explain this to them and say, hey, actually, you can do this where you can quieten down aspects of your mind and you can learn to focus? Because I know the kids tend to fidget and short attention span, etc. So you're saying that with this neurofeedback, you can get somebody to just settle, focus, be still, and become self-aware. And they can do it by telling their brain to do it?
Exactly. The ADHD side of things and learning disorders, this is our most studied. We have the deepest science in this. And in my clinic, we see these kids come in. They're like little fireballs. they don't sit still. They can't, especially boys. Boys are much, but the girls can do it as well. They can't focus, and you think it's an attitude. You think they're not trying, or you think that they're being willful or that. But the real science comes when you ask the question, why do they have to do what they're doing? That's when you start asking proper questions. For example, with the ADHD thing, with the hyperactivity, that is a paradoxical solution to a problem. And the problem is, the frontal lobes are not engaged. They are not optimized. They're under-regulated. So there's slow wave activity occurring when they need to be in the waves we're in now, which is attentive, and it's quite a higher burning of glucose level of brain activity. Okay, so the kids are adjusting to this problem by having some odd manifestation, like being the class clown, which was myself, I think, as a kid, and being hyperactive or whatever. And in the inattention side of things, the paradox exists there too, because it's rarely that the kids are not paying attention. The fact is they're flooded with their attention circuits are flooded. They are not gating. They are not selecting what to attend to. Everything's coming in. What's Johnny doing back there? What's Mary doing there? Anything but what's on the board. so that they have this inability to control and focus. Now, this can happen in business as well. When you're trying to work through your business plan, you can be paying attention to all kinds of peripheral things and just going off the focus. And it's so easy to do, fussing around with details, you know, making sure your stapler works, rather than forming the type of relationships you need to exceed to your current position and move to a better place in business. So same with the ADD kids, the same with affective disorders. These can all affect your performance in business. These things just don't go away. If you have these conditions, you tend to adapt to them. You know, so and it's rarely recognized in adulthood, but we can see it in children much more clearly. You know, but we are those children. So if we grow up with an ADD type brain, that's going to be in your business behavior. And in fact, I know many top executives running around in Sydney doing very good business, and their ADD is get out. If they didn't have on their shoulder somebody controlling, dotting the I's and crossing the T's, they'd be right over the cliff. So they form a pattern where they're able to bring other talents in, a team, so that they can have the visions and the go-for attitude, but they have somebody that's keeping them from doing silly things. You know, so you see that a lot. Okay.
So basically, when you say that, it just sounds to me like a personality that's very creative, and they've kind of learned to harness that, but they're also aware enough that they're not into details, and they've got people to back them up there, which is great when you've got a team around you. How about for a small to medium-sized business or a solopreneur, they call them that, where you're everything, you wear all the different hats, and you know that there are aspects that you're just not good at or don't care about, and for some peculiar reason, you cannot stop yourself from, you know, fussing with your stapler.
Yes.
So yes. Those sorts of people would benefit greatly from your kind of a therapy strategy, wouldn't they? In terms of getting them to understand that they can get their brain waves cycling at a different frequency, which is basically what you're talking about, isn't it?
Exactly. So with anybody, I don't care if you're a top executive or a small entrepreneur or a small business person or where you are in the spectrum, becoming mindful of what you're doing and asking the question, why must I do that? Why am I doing this instead of that? Then you start the investigation, really. That's the place to begin. Rather than say, I'm not doing that in denial or disavow, you know, it's somebody else's fault or, you know, these people are charging me too much money or, you know, whatever the little drama you have going on to try to dissuade yourself from being present. Once you take that step, then you can look at the range of possibilities to help yourself out. Now, you mentioned a lot of the courses and seminars that people do, and these are wonderful things. However, I know a lot of salespeople that used to go to these super salesman morning seminars, and they'd get wound up and get a fervor, and they would head out. But by the afternoon, it was pretty much back to where they were, you know, with the same problems, things like that. You can't really become somebody else through an emotional charge. All you're going to do is become a temporarily a little different, but you won't change the pattern. The patterns have to change way inside, at the engine room. Now, brainwave training is one way to get there. There are psychotherapy is another way to get there. There are plenty of roads to roam. But what we think we have with the neurofeedback is that we can treat your fundamental adaptations that are maladaptive, not good for you, We can train those at the core, and then all the other things, all the other things of learning, experience, coaching, all of those, they can then have a nice place to land, you know, and really do their work, because there's no getting away from learning. Learning is the core of what the brain does. It's what it does for a living, and if we can free it up, it can learn the better.
Wow, that's amazing. What you were talking about, really, in the personal development field, they talk about being stuck in patterns or doing self-sabotaging behavior, isn't it? And you're saying, yep, the method that you've got that works very well is the fact that we can unhook the carriage from the horse, kind of thing, and you're not dragged along without, in a sense, your consent, because it becomes compulsive behavior that people say, I don't know why I did it, but I just did it. And even though they know, as an afterthought, that it's A, not good for them, it's like eating chocolate cake continuously and not realizing, but it just goes down their gob, or other behaviors which are considered destructive long term. So including business, like, you know, trashing business relationships, or not looking at the cash flow for some peculiar reason, being in that state of denial, as you say. But underlying all that, and so people out there, don't feel bad that you do sort of weird stuff that's not helpful. There is an explanation for that. But more important, there is a way to modify that behavior and completely eliminate it even?
Yes, you can. By and large, if I can back up a little bit, there's only a small number, say 10 or 11 different types of failure patterns of the brain that we can identify now. And that's your phenotype, right? So your endophenotype in scientific terms. That's your fundamental core pattern, okay? Now, you will probably die with that pattern, you know, in a sense that will follow you, because it's genetically predetermined and it's experientially enhanced, okay? Now, but that does not mean you can't turn the dial down on all the intensities of the problems that you may have. And all you have to do is get that near enough. It's not about perfection. I don't know anybody with a perfect brain, and I'll tell you, I've seen a lot of them, you know. Some you want, some you don't. But if you can get the intensities down, you are then free again to develop other aspects of your expression. And you can learn different things that were probably just invisible to you prior to that.
Okay.
Learning is about being present, and we are often, most of what we do is not present. We're past or future, but we're not present. And that is a real thing to learn.
Okay, so you've got the scientific aspect covered here, but I've heard that same sort of, I guess, explanation before, but coming from the metaphysicians, you know, the Deepak Chopras. I know he's a medical doctor, but he talks about meditation and being in the gap, meaning the space between your thoughts or between the stimulus and response, so that you actually are present and say, hey, is this going to be useful for me and it's going to help me, or is it going to destroy my business? And so you're putting in this particular layer, which I think for so many people who feel uncomfortable with the esoteric would actually sort of see this as a godsend, because there is actually a scientific explanation for it. Now, you talk about brainwave function as well, because I'm very interested in that aspect, that different parts, we go through different phases in terms of our awareness and how fast, call that, the frequency of our brainwaves will just emit. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that in the context of how you get somebody who's basically like an ADHD kid to quieten down certain areas and arc up other areas of their brain?
Okay. Now, I wonder if I shouldn't just do a little history first. The idea of brainwave training was a discovery. It was purely serendipity. Professor Barry Sternman from UCLA was working on sleep research, and he trained cats to do a certain frequency that's associated with sleep, the SMR rhythm. And it's a beautiful rhythm. It's a magic rhythm because it's the rhythm that regulates the brain, keeps you from falling asleep, but also keeps you from waking up. It's just a wonderful frequency. And it's just the positive side of burning of glucose. So you're just positive. And then below that is alpha, and below that is theta, and below that is delta. These are slower waves associated with different states. So relaxation to zoning out to sleep, right? And then the beta waves, which are go on up to gamma. So if you're playing basketball or you're in a really intense negotiation at work, you're going to be in a higher state of burning of glucose, so higher frequencies, right? So he discovered this SMR rhythm, and later on, purely by chance, he was doing another research project, and it was a bit nasty, but they were doing a NASA program to see how much rocket fuel could be absorbed, because it's very toxic and it burns the white matter of the brain, and you end up having an epileptic seizure and die. And they wanted to bring the astronauts back, so they wanted to know how much they could leak into the cabins. So he was doing the fundamental research on this. I know it's gruesome. And he was doing fundamental research on this. And he found that some of these cats that they'd injected with this stuff didn't have a seizure at all. They all died because they were lethal dosed. And he went back to the lab notes and he found, the cats that had late seizure or no seizures at all were the ones that were trained on SMR. So lo and behold, he has in his laboratory a woman who had grand mal seizures twice a month. You know, that's not a happy thing. It's quite pasty and frail-looking thing. And he asked her if she'd like to train this brainwave and see what happened. You know, so he put the electrodes on the head and trained this thing. And guess what? Her frequency level just dropped like a stone. And she became happy and bright again, you know. Now, he thought he won the Nobel Peace Prize right then and there, but unfortunately, he has to wait a while. So that was the start of it. And then he did studies on epilepsy, and then other people in his lab, students, took it off into ADHD or brain injury, and away it went, you know. But I tell you, it would still be in the UCLA labs to this day if it wasn't for mothers with kids with problems that wanted solutions now. They're not going to wait three or four generations for the guys in the white coats to sort all this out. But what we learned from all of that stuff was that you can train brainwaves, and there are particular brainwaves that are really good to train and others probably don't want to enhance at all. But that's where it all started and evolved out from there, you know. So that's the basics of brainwave training, that you get some signal that says you're in this wave or you're not. And when you are, you get a reinforcement, like a bing or a bong or a light goes on. You know, now it's pretty jazzy because we can watch videos and do this. Your brain gets the information about where it is in its frequency settings, right? And it will actually, the brain's more like a puppy dog than anything spiritual, I think. Because if you pat it, it'll follow you all the way to school if it can. It's just really responsive to any information that's given. So if it can move, like say with the autistics, it's very hard for their brains, they're very locked, very stuck, to change pattern. But for most of us, we can change quite well. With a little bit of feedback, a little bit of information to the brain, you can then train yourself to a more optimal state of neural firing, which means you're awake. Your memory systems work better. Your focus is better. You're less bound in internal sensations. You know, which worry is one of those. You know, there are others, but worry is a big one for us. And so you can get bound in those states and keep repeating the behavior totally unconsciously. Okay. It just makes perfect sense to you.
I got a question here in the chat room that says, how do you get your left brain to talk to your right brain more and be integrated rather than seeing them as quite separate entities? I mean, I'm not talking biologically.
Yes, I know. The hemispheric stuff is very interesting. It's been around for quite some time.